Welcome back to The Guilty and the Ghostly. I'm Audrey.
I'm Josh.
And we're in two different locations.
We are. I'm currently in Ohio.
Where he's been for a week. We still have a week to go.
Yeah. Still got a week.
It's taking forever.
But I have got to see some cool stuff this time, finally.
Yeah, I forgot to remind you to bring the either cool facts or crazy stories, but I think just you kind of saying what you've done would be kind of cool. So.
Yeah, I think so, too. And then there's some stuff that happened in the news today, too.
Lay it on me.
Did you see that Oliver Tree died?
That what?
Oliver Tree. He's that weird musician.
Oh.
That wears that weird wig. No, you'll have to look him up after this. He's a strange character.
He ended up
getting a helicopter crash today.
I thought you were literally talking about a tree.
Negative.
Oliver Tree. I have no idea who this man is.
He plays some strange music.
Okay. A helicopter?
Not my cup of tea.
A helicopter crash? What happened?
Apparently two helicopters hit each other in midair.
Oh, snap. Who messed up that?
I'm not entirely sure.
Well, we talked about this earlier, too. Another oopsies is there was a bungee jumping accident where they forgot to. It's one of those deals where you go to the bridge and they throw you off the bridge, but you're on a bungee cord. So you bungee and have fun. Well, they threw this lady over the ledge and nobody hooked the bungee cord up to her and she literally fell to her death.
Yep. Two terrible tragedies that probably could have been stopped.
Just because somebody forgot to do their job, I guess. I don't know. That's insane. Insane. Yep. So what else did you do other than that?
This time I found some guys that were pretty cool. We all went in and did some things all week, really. We went to Niagara Falls, and that was very cool. Just the energy that you feel off of the falls almost leeches your energy from you.
Yeah.
It was insane, the feeling that you get there.
Can you feel like the wind coming off of it?
Yes.
Oh, that's so cool. He showed me some pictures, and they were absolutely stunning. I couldn't imagine seeing it in person.
And next time, I'm going to have to go to the Canada side.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was seeing some other pictures from there, and they were gorgeous.
Yeah.
So we'll have to take the family there one of these days.
Have to do it. And then you did a really cool thing today that everybody's jealous of. I'll have to add some pictures, or we'll show some pictures later. Maybe.
Yeah, we found this restaurant in Cleveland, and it's a horror movie-themed restaurant called The Haunted House. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
A lot of their entrees were named after horror movie characters. The people that were there were dressed up as a lot of those characters. I mean, it was just an interesting environment.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah, they definitely, of course I'm not there, but the pictures, they have it all decorated and spooky. Like, it almost looks like a haunted house inside this restaurant with a bunch of horror characters and memorabilia all over. And The food looked good. Was the food good?
It was delicious.
Awesome. What'd you end up getting? What was the name of it?
I got the... I think it was the Texas Chainsaw Burger.
Okay.
I think that's what it was called.
Yeah.
I originally wanted something else, but I can't remember what it was now. But they were only serving brunch at that time.
I gotcha. Yeah, definitely have to go back. They have something kind of like that over in Dallas that I want to go to. We'll have to go check it out.
And we've seen something else we're going to look at, I think, at some point this week. It's like $15, and you can go into like a real U.S. submarine. You get to walk around and look at it.
Okay.
So we're going to check that out.
That'll be fun.
Yeah.
And how funny, I don't know if you want their name said on there, so I won't say it, but that the two guys that he's hanging out with this week at work, they have the same name.
Yeah, they don't care.
You should have been Dave, like...
The Daves.
You should be like, that's my name too. No. That would have been funny. I'm glad you're enjoying yourself this time. He's done this trip a couple of times, and they were very long trips, and he didn't really get put with anybody that he clicked with very well, so he just literally laid in the hotel the entire time, and it makes for a long couple of weeks when you're not doing anything and just waiting to come home.
Yeah.
I can tell you're enjoying it a bit more this time, because normally when you're there, you literally want me on the phone 24/7, but this time... We still talk, but not nearly as much. So
yeah.
And then
I've actually found a lot of fun stuff to do this time, thankfully.
Good, good.
I almost regret not doing some of this stuff before.
I told you you would, but it definitely makes it more enjoyable when you have somebody that has those common interests that wants to go do it with you. I mean, it's still cool to go by yourself, but you're just like, yeah, this is cool to yourself. And then you go back. So
yeah. And like on our drive back from Niagara yesterday, me and the Daves were just cutting up the whole way, and there wasn't a second that we weren't laughing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was great.
That makes for good times. Well, we had fun yesterday. We got to celebrate Aaron's birthday, so Tamara and them got a big water slide. So the kids were playing on the water slide, but of course the adults had to, well, I say adults, me and Eric got on the water slide. When I went down a few times, Eric, when I got there, he was on it at that point, and it was time to start making hot dogs for everybody to get there, and his lower back was killing him. So Tamara's like, take some Tylenol, take some ibuprofen, do something. So she finally got him to take some medicine. Well, of course it helped his back, but instead of taking it easy and staying off of it so his back wouldn't hurt anymore, he went right back on it. And not only was he going right back on it, dude was doing flips down it.
Oh, my gosh.
I was like, Eric, your back was hurting. What are you doing? He's like, nah, it's good now. I was like, yeah, now.
Yeah, okay.
So I didn't ask. I talked to Tamara earlier, but I forgot to ask her if his back was out or if he's good.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, though. The kids ended up staying the night there. They, of course, have kids our kids' age. They've all grown up together. We've been best friends for 18 years now, I guess. So I got a night all by myself last night, and that does not happen very often at all. And Tamara was making fun of me. So the kids, of course, wanted to stay the night. And I figured as soon as I was starting to leave that Jackson would be like, I want to come home with you. But he didn't. He wanted to stay at Aunt Tamara's. So I was pulled up, and I was just, you know, sitting in the car, just kind of taking a breath for a minute before I came in and listened to our German Shepherd scream at me. And I was sitting there, and my intrusive thoughts came through, or my whatever thoughts you want to call them. And I was like, what if there's somebody in the house right now? And I go in there, and what am I going to do? What happens? So I came in, but all the dogs were sleeping, so I knew nobody was in here. The big dogs wouldn't really care. I don't think they would do much, but Groot would be barking if anybody was in here, but...
Now, you say that, but I've seen Charlie hem somebody up.
That is true. She does get a little crazy if they get too close for comfort. So she's pretty cool as long as we're around. But if we're not there, she's not going to let you very close. So, and then
dog has the scariest growl.
Yeah, she does. And then our actual scary dog that has literally fought off five dogs in our yard because they got too close to the kids. She is the sweetest, most lovable dog ever, but she don't mess around, and she weighs about 80 pounds. She can be pretty scary, so.
Yep.
But, you know, so I went laid down, and I thought, well, I'm already scared out of my mind. Let's go ahead and put my comfort show on. So I turned on Evil Lives Here and called you and went to bed. So it was a great night. Yep. Other than that, I haven't been doing much. We just finished our last softball tournament of the summer until later this summer when travel ball starts back up. They normally take June and July off, which is A-okay with me. I need a break. So hopefully we can get some cool stuff done now that we have a few weekends open. Speaking of, like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
2 weeks and we'll begin Tennessee.
June the 26th, the 27th, and the 28th.
It's coming up. You ready?
Go look for us at Comic or at FrankenCon, guys.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. I kind of glanced today at the whatever you want to call
itinerary.
Itinerary. Though it looks like there's some cool stuff going on. There's some cool people that I'm not 100% familiar with. Like I know who they are, but they're not really necessarily ones that I know. So I may try to watch a couple of the movies that they're from this next couple weeks before we go, just so I'm familiar. I think we're going to have some giveaways. I know Corky's been working his butt off, Corky and Alicia, on getting stuff ready, and they've got a cool little setup for us. I'm got some shirts made and working on a few things, so I think it'll be really cool. It'll be fun to get together and record our live episode with them and go sightseeing for a little bit. Have a little getaway for you and me, too. It's been a while.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. So, again, find us at FrankenCon 20... Say it again?
26th, 27th, and the 28th.
I have so many dates going through my mind right now. So, yeah, find us there. Get tickets. I think they still have tickets, and it should be a fun time.
I think we'll have fun.
I hope so.
There's supposed to be some pretty cool people there.
Yeah, like me.
Well, I mean, obviously.
Oh, God.
Well.
My foot was asleep.
Technical difficulties?
No, I just kicked the microphone. My foot was going to sleep. I always start cross-legged, and then my foot goes to sleep. I need a freaking foot rest in here.
Yeah, at least you didn't sit on your nuts.
It's kind of impossible. I don't really have nuts, so. You can't really see my hair. My colors.
I can see your hair.
Well, you can see it, but so I got real brave. I dye my own hair, and I got real brave because I've been doing one color for a while now, and my daughter dyes her hair black, and she had a little bit left over, so I did a little bit of black and a little bit of red, and I like it. I need more black, though, next time, now that I know that I'll
match your soul.
Black like my soul. Little ray of black sunshine. It's funny because when most people meet me at first, not as bad now that I dye my hair red, but when I was like blonde and I didn't really dress very alternative or edgy, and then they'd find out like, oh, you like spooky stuff? You listen to rock music? Like, I would have never guessed that. Now I think I look a little bit more the part, but before nobody had any clue. They were just like, oh, I thought you were just...
You finally found your image.
I guess so. It's just, I always thought you were just some bubbly blonde, but you're not bad. Or both.
You're a y'all alternative.
Yeah, exactly. 100%. Well, they wouldn't say I was bubbly because I still had RBF really bad. So they're like, they would straight up say, I thought you were a bitch. And I'm like, nope, just my face. Just how my face is. So it is what it
Keeps
is.
You beautiful.
There you go. If I don't smile, I don't have wrinkles. That's what Kanye West says. Or Kim Kardashian.
Okay.
Or somebody. I don't know.
He also thinks he's God. So.
Well, I mean, if the shoe fits. I'm just kidding. Well, I have a story for you today. So, like we said earlier, you left me for 2 weeks with all your little devil spawns.
It was a nice vacation.
It's really rude. Very rude. So, I will be completely honest. I researched this case like over a month ago and was like, oh, I'll just get to it when I get to it. And, it's about a lady, and a lot of the times questioned, was she pushed to do this, or was there pre-existing conditions there? So it's been a while since we've done a female murderer. So I thought, hey, you left me here. I'm going to have you a little scared that I might snap and kill you when you get back. So for legal purposes.
I don't forget that every day.
That's a joke, allegedly. It's for legal purposes. I would never. Or would I? No. And this woman, so I hadn't really heard her case before until, which we'll get down to it. She passed away this year. And so she was all over the news. And I'm like, who is this woman? I don't know who this is. I wasn't familiar with her story. And once I started kind of researching, I mean, your heart does feel for her. But like a lot of these cases, you know, you hear their backstory and it's hard not to sympathize with the person they were before they did this horrible thing. And you can kind of see maybe what led up to it a little bit. Obviously, it doesn't justify it, but you can kind of at least see the steps or the progression that it becomes what it is. So. I think this is definitely one of those cases where you can kind of see what what made this woman snap. So,
okay.
You ready?
Let's hear it.
Okay. Here we go.
I'm ready to hear my demise.
Okay. I don't know if I'm going to be a silent. She's not very silent. She's loud and proud, let me tell you. So, who we are talking about today is Betty Broderick. You know anything about it? Nothing.
Nope.
Nada. Well, Betty Broderick was actually born Elizabeth Ann. I looked this up earlier. It's already gone. Biscellia, I believe. Biscellia. I'm not sure. B-E-S-C-E-G-L-I-A. Biscellia.
Okay.
Okay. Well, she was born on November 7th, 1947 in the Bronx. She grew up in a large Italian-American Catholic family. She was the third of six children. So right there, kind of in the middle. You always got to watch those middle children. We know from experience.
Yep.
Her father owned a successful plastering business, and the family was considered financially comfortable and deeply religious. Betty's childhood was described as structured and very traditional. She attended Catholic schools and was raised with strict expectations about family roles, marriage, and motherhood. She would later say she was, quote, raised to be a housewife from the day she was born, which I hate that. With our kids, you know, we really try to instill in all of our kids, but especially the girls, like there's so much more than just being a mom or just doing this. Like you've got your whole life ahead of you. But I think during that time period too, it was probably even worse. I mean, most women were there to be a wife and a mom, and that's what you were made for, and that's what you do.
Yeah, I really don't understand that mentality anymore.
Yeah.
You really can't live off of a single income in today's world.
And it's really hard, you know, just from personal experience, it's still the world is still built like that too, like where the mother comes home. She normally is the one that's supposed to make dinner. She's the one that's supposed to keep up with the house and keep all of these chores of the ideal housewife, but yet they're also supposed to work 40 hours a week. It definitely takes a toll on your mental health, and you get wore out and you get tired. Now, I'm very blessed. I've got you who helps with dinner. You don't clean, but that's besides the point.
I try to keep the yard clean.
You do mow. You do mow. I'll give you that. I mean, but just to be in that type of relationship where you don't have that support and you're literally the one, and which we'll talk more about this in a minute. So she was raised to be like the housewife. And as we get into her story, yes, she is. But at the beginning, she kind of had to do that double duty as well. She was working multiple jobs. She was taking care of the house, the kids, and supporting her husband while he goes and lives his dream. And she was just kind of pushed off to the side. I don't know. It makes you feel for him for sure.
Yeah.
She grew up in a very strict Catholic household. She was supposed to support her husband while he works and be blessed with children, and then possibly in your later years, maybe even grandchildren. So that was literally instilled in her from the time that she was born until, you know, the very end. She would later attend the College of Mount St. Vincent, where she earned a degree in childhood education. While attending college, she met Dan Broderick in 1965 at a college party at Notre Dame. She was a freshman and he was a senior. He walked up to her and gave her a note on a napkin. So you think you have moves. I don't know if this would give me the ick if it happened in real life, or if I'd be like, okay, I see you. But he passed her a napkin, and on that napkin it said, Daniel T. Broderick, MDA. And he would tell her that the MDA stood for Medical Doctor Almost.
Oh my God.
Like, that's very corny, but at the same time, it's like, okay, that's kind of funny. So I don't know if I would be like, no, thank you, or if it would work on me. You've gotten me with some corny jokes, so I'm afraid it would have worked.
What can I say? I'm a wordsmith.
I'm afraid it would have worked on me. Shortly after meeting...
Doesn't help that I'm so good looking either.
Oh, yeah. It's the beard.
Yeah, probably.
Shortly after meeting, Dan would tell friends that he was going to marry Betty someday. So, I mean, he knew right off the bat, like, that was the girl for him. He was instantly infatuated with her, and the two would later marry in April of 1969 and would eventually move across country as Dan pursued his medical and law degree.
His almost medical degree?
His almost medical degree. Were you instantly infatuated with me?
What do you think?
No.
We already had this discussion.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Betty would get pregnant right around the couple's honeymoon. Like, they said either, like, that night or, like, right around there, she got pregnant. And just 9 months after getting married, the couple would welcome their very first child, Kim. The couple would end up having 5 children altogether, 2 daughters named Kim and Lee, and 2 sons named Daniel and Rhett. They would have their 5th child, a son named Rex, but in 1971, he would pass away just 2 days after he was born. The cause of death was never really disclosed, so I'm not sure if it was complications or if he had, like, any medical issues. It was never really reported on what happened, but I could see how that would really affect your marriage to lose a child. I mean, that,
yeah.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, that would put a really serious strain on the relationship.
Yeah, just you mentally, you as a couple. I mean, I couldn't imagine having to go through that.
And then depending on whose care the child was in, I mean, you could only think that maybe someone would have some resentment against the other.
I could see that. Well, this one, I mean, 2 days after, they may have still been in the hospital. They may have not even brought the baby home yet. But yeah, I mean, in an instant like that, it would be really hard. You know, if something were to happen in one parent's care, obviously, well, I mean, sometimes it can be their fault, but even if it's not their fault, I could see you kind of holding resentment, I guess, saying, you know, if you would have been watching them better, if you would have done this better, then something wouldn't have happened, and that could really take a toll.
Yeah.
Well, Dan would finish medical school, and then he started attending Harvard Law to become a lawyer. While pursuing his career, Betty would take care of the home and the children, but she also worked multiple jobs trying to financially support the family while her husband was pursuing his career. So he really wasn't earning money. He was strictly going to school. And even back then, you know, she could take little odd jobs, but it wouldn't be enough to really support him going to school and the kids and life. And so she would literally work multiple jobs just to make ends meet while he was going to school and take care of the kids and the house and everything else. So basically all of the responsibility was on her up to that point. She literally busted her butt so that he could pursue his dreams, which good on her. Like, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, even just me, most of the time being gone all the time and having to do all that work, and you having to be there by yourself. I mean, I know that it was harder on you.
Yeah.
Than it was for me.
Yeah, because I mean, you kind of you. It gives you a new appreciation for single parents too. You know, yeah. Working full time, but also, you know, making dinner, make sure everything's clean, make sure your kids are clean, make sure homework's done, making sure, you know, especially with like our kids who are super busy with softball and baseball and football, and you've got all these practices and your mind's literally going 90 to nothing. Like, did I remember everything today? Did we get everything done? And you definitely learn to manage things, I guess, you know, what can wait till tomorrow, and you push it off and do as much. And then, like, in our instance, you know, I'd know you'd be coming home that next week or whatever, so I'd try to get as much done as I could because I didn't want the whole week that you were home to be you catching up on stuff that I couldn't do. So a lot of times I would go mow the grass because that would take a whole day. Well, I don't want to spend the whole day that you're home with you mowing. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot.
Yeah, and there were times it was hard because I would come home one week and I would be working days. The following week, I'd be working nights.
Yeah.
So the first 2 days home, I was just catching up on sleep.
Yeah, and I'm a very scheduled person. I love our schedules. And I have to be when you are gone because I literally could not operate if I didn't have a schedule with the kids. And then, of course, you'd want to come home and spend time with the kids, and our schedule would go out the window and my mind would go crazy, but I would also still try to be understanding because I would understand you want to spend time with your kids, but it's hard. It's hard being a parent, working, not working, out of town, at home. I don't know how we do it, man.
I have no idea how we manage this crazy life we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we do.
We do it. Well, in 1973, Dan would accept a job at a prestigious law firm in San Diego. He would end up doing really well, and when he started working in medical malpractice lawsuits, he would start calling himself, okay, this is the ick. This would not work for me. This is an ick. He would call himself Count Da Money.
What?
Yes, he gave himself the nickname Count Da Money.
If you have to give yourself a nickname,
it's not cool.
People probably don't like you.
It's not cool. Yeah. So stupid. Well, he would buy himself the fanciest hand-tailored suits. He got a nose job. I mean, he was just blowing money, spending money, you know, as fast as he can. His poor wife just worked her ass off for the past however many years trying to get him through college.
So you mentioned all him buying all these clothes and changing his appearance, it almost sounds like he has a complex about himself.
And you're going to see a little bit more of that a little bit later, too.
Okay.
I think he was very self-absorbed. I don't think... I don't know. We'll get into it. Well, with all the money that was coming in, Betty was finally able to quit working and become a full-time stay-at-home mom for her kids. The couple became socialites in San Diego. Betty was well-known for being very involved in her kids and kind of had that supermom image. Like, if the school had something going on, she was there. If the kids were involved in something, she was, like, head honcho of it. Like, she was very involved in the kids' life. So even though she was a stay-at-home mom, she was still very busy with taking care of the kids and being involved to making sure everything was taken care of. People really looked up to Betty and Dan, thinking that they were basically this dynamic power couple who had it all. The couple would purchase a home in La Jolla, California. They joined the local country club and were known to go on extravagant shopping sprees. And on the outside, they really seemed to have it all and that they were kind of like this perfect family. But on the inside, things were slowly starting to become undone, which you see that a lot now, like on social media. A lot of times when people are pushing, you know, look how in love we are. We're so in love. And then like a month later, oh, we're getting a divorce. Because I think you really try to project what you want your life to be, and it's not. So you push even harder to make it look like that. And a lot of times it comes crumbling down.
Yeah.
Well, after the death of their fifth son, Betty would have two more miscarriages that deeply affected the family, which, again, I could not imagine. You know, she probably, no reason to, but probably felt guilty. You know, I've had two miscarriages, that's on me. And he may have, you know, I doubt he blamed her. He could have. He seems kind of like an asshole, but whatever. You know, I just couldn't imagine having to go through that after losing a baby. You know, going through full-term labor and then having to have this on top of it, I can imagine it would be rough. Plus, you add on the stress of Betty that, you know, supporting the family with multiple jobs, taking care of the home while Dan was in school, it really caused a lot of friction between the couple. It also didn't help that Dan would stay out late going out to bars all the time. He claimed that he was networking and trying to further his position in his legal career. He would literally leave work and stay out till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And like she would get all dolled up waiting for him to come home and he would never come home. And of course, they would often fight when he did come home and it would escalate to being physical. Like there was one night that he returned home late and Dan and Betty would start arguing. Betty would like pick up a ketchup bottle and like threw it at him, which I mean, it's not funny, but I can see, you know what I mean? Betty would then, on another night, Dan would throw an empty aquarium over the second story balcony during an argument, which those things are heavy, man. Like, was it full? Surely it wasn't full of water. Like,
surely not.
Surely not.
Water weighs 8.8 pounds a gallon.
I guess I did say empty aquarium, but why do you have a random empty aquarium in? I don't know.
they just got done cleaning it.
I guess so. And he's just pissed off and just, I'm going to throw this over the balcony. I don't know.
I don't know either. People in their anger sometimes just gets the best of them.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, their oldest daughter, Kim, would remember the couple constantly arguing. She said that her mom, Betty, was always mad at Dan, constantly locking him out of the house. Well, I'm sorry, but if I'm at home with my kids all freaking day and I'm expecting you to come home and just have dinner with me and you're not showing up till 2 or 3 o'clock every morning, I'm locking your ass out too. Go on. Yeah. Like
that's absurd that someone would even do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, they must have been, like, a very volatile couple for him to just not want to come home.
It seems like it. And which, you know, I'm not, again, I'm not defending him, but that's also going to cause him not to want to come home. Every time I come home, we fight. So I'm just going to stay out. And it's just this vicious cycle that continues to go. And it's just not good.
Yeah, like, when I get off work, I'm looking forward to coming home.
Most days.
I couldn't imagine feeling the opposite way.
Yeah. I couldn't either. And why would you want to live like that? I mean, and we'll talk about.
I wouldn't see anybody that would want to live like that.
No.
But unfortunately, people are messed up in the head sometimes.
And they feed off of it.
Traced back to childhood trauma.
Yeah. And they feed off of that, off of each other.
Yeah.
And this is a different time period. And she comes from a Catholic, which, again, we'll talk about it here. Well, I'm going to skip it because we're fixing to talk about it. So it kind of explains why she didn't leave. Well, during another fight, Betty would actually pick up a stereo system and threw it directly at Dan. So, I mean, they're both constantly just throwing shit at each other all the time. Betty would constantly threaten Dan with a divorce, but he knew they were just empty threats. He knew she wouldn't go through with it because that means their picture-perfect life would come to an end. Her way of living would dramatically change because he makes all the money. Even though she worked her ass off to get him where they're at, he's the breadwinner. So if she leaves him, that'll affect that. And not to mention that they were devout Catholics and divorce simply wasn't an option at that time. It was literally instilled in her to be the perfect doting housewife and support your man, raise your kids. And so he basically knew that she was stuck and would not leave. So she's like, I want a divorce or I'm going to get a divorce. And he was just like, whatever. I'll see you tomorrow at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, he just blew her off, which I'm sure that drove her insane. Like, I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah, it absolutely would.
Yeah. I just, you feel for her. You definitely feel for her before the traumatic event. So on November 22nd, 1983, Betty wanted to surprise Dan. So even though they're going through all this, you know, volatile relationship, she's still wanting to work on it. She's wanting to make things better. And it was Dan's 39th birthday. So she's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to his office and I'm going to surprise him with a bottle of champagne and a dozen roses. I'm going to make it a big date night. We're going to go out together. She got a babysitter for the kids or left the older kids with them. She planned it all out. Well, she gets to his office and Dan's nowhere to be found. And she walks in and she sees like birthday decorations and she sees a chocolate cake. She sees a bottle of wine. And she sees two wine glasses. So immediately she's like, something's up. Of course, he's staying out late. So she already kind of had some suspicion. So Betty would find the secretary and she's like, hey, do you know where Dan is? And the secretary was like, oh, well, Dan left at about noon today with his personal assistant named Linda. Of course, like I said, Betty was already suspicious of Linda and believed that Dan might have been having an affair with her. And so Betty's like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sit my ass in his office. I'm going to wait for them to walk in. Maybe he's not out with her doing stuff that he shouldn't be. I'm going to wait it out and see what happens. So she waits and she waits and she waits. He never shows up. So Betty's like, all right, I'm going home. This is stupid. So she drives home. And of course, she's angry. She's pissed. She has already had these suspicions. She finds two wine glasses, a bottle of wine. She's like, I already know what's going on. So she takes all of his little fancy suits. She goes over to that second story balcony that he threw his aquarium over and just like, two can play this game, mother trucker. And threw all of his clothes out in the yard and set them on fire.
Okay.
Okay, girl. I can get behind this. You know, it might not be great, but you know what? Get it, girl. You've worked your ass off to get this man where he is. You take care of the home. You take care of the kids. I can see being ticked off and wanting to get revenge. I can get behind this. So, like I said, she went outside, lit it on fire. Eventually, Dan would come home really late that night, and she's like, I'm confronting him. So she confronts him. She's like, I know you're sleeping with her. You're trying to trade me in for someone younger, because not only was it a volatile, like, physically, but supposedly Dan would, like, call Betty fat and old and stupid and all these names, and it really affected her internally. Like, it really affected her. And so when she confronted him, he's... Is there a moth in here? Something just touched my shoulder, I swear to God.
I didn't see anything.
Something just tapped my shoulder. I am not kidding.
Audrey?
What?
Did something follow us, Mama?
Stop it right now. I swear, something just, like, I felt like a little pitter-patter on my freaking shoulder.
I didn't see anything.
Now what?
Just invite it to sit down and keep going.
Okay, well, great. Did Mr. P come?
Gosh, I hope not.
Normally, if there's a moth in here, I can see it. Okay, well, we're gonna act like that didn't happen. Where was I? I forgot. Oh.
We were freaking out.
I was freaking out before that. So he would call her names and he would, you know, belittle her. And I'm sure that has an effect on you. And he would be like, you're crazy. I'm not having an affair. There's nothing going on. I'm not with her. And basically would just gaslight her and be like, nothing's going on. Nothing's happened. You're insane. And again, I can see that driving you crazy because you know, I mean, trust your gut. You know something's going on. You show up. They have a wine bottle. They have two glasses. He's staying out to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. She's like, I know better. And he's like, no, nothing's going on. Well, eventually things would get so bad that Dan would finally move out of the house in February of 1985, leaving Betty and the kids. So he would buy his own house and he would move out. Well, that Easter, Kim had a friend over and she had asked Betty if she would take the friend home. And again, I know she has a lot of personal stuff going on, but from what I understand, she was kind of volatile with the kids as well. And Kim had asked her to take her friend home, and Betty just lost her shit and was like, you always expect me to do everything for you. I have to do everything. Your dad doesn't respect what I do. And she told Kim, like, pack your shit up. And so Kim packed a bag, and Betty would drive Kim over to Dan's new house and would just, like, basically boot her out of the car. And Kim had to wait on the doorsteps until her dad could get home because her dad wasn't even home and the house was locked, and literally had to wait for, like, a long time until he could come and let her in and Kim would move in with her dad, which I couldn't, as a mother, no, not happening.
You wouldn't let our kids live with me?
I'm not. No. I'm just going to be honest. No. Nothing against you. I just. Sorry. Not happening.
I see how it is.
I know. Well, just a few days later, she would end up doing the same exact thing with her child, Danny. Betty would just drop him off at Dan's house and left him there and took off. And then, just a few months later, she would end up dropping off Lee and Rhett at Dan's house as well. So she just dropped all the kids off. And, of course, the children are upset. They're screaming. They're crying. They don't want to be left there. And Betty thought, you know, I guess her thought process is, I'm going to teach Dan a lesson. Like, he thinks I have it so easy that I just stay at home and do nothing. Here, you take care of the kids for a few weeks. You do all of this like I've been doing for the last however many years. Let's see how well you handle it.
Yeah, that's kind of what it feels like to me. Like, she's just been so resentful of him that she's just trying to teach him a lesson at this point.
I think so. I do. Yeah. Well, this, unfortunately, would backfire on Betty. Since she voluntarily left the kids with Dan, he would use this to his advantage. In June, Betty went back to the family home and she basically, or to Dan's house, and basically trashed Dan's bedroom. She broke mirrors, she spray painted everything black, and finally, on September 23rd, Dan would file for divorce. Betty would go back to his house 2 more times. She took a Boston cream pie and smeared it all over his bedroom, his furniture, his clothes. And the second time, she would take bottles of wine and, like, throw them through the windows, the sliding glass door, just, like, tearing up the place. And again, as a mother, I understand you being mad at him, but one, you just ditched your kids, left your kids there with him. I couldn't do that as a mother. Two, this is their safe place, and now you're going to their home and trashing it. How can you do that to your kids? I just don't understand that. So my sympathy kind of starts going a little with this because it's your job as a mother to make sure your kids are taken care of. I understand maybe she needed a break, so you're taking your kids to their dad. But then why are you going to their house and demolishing everything and making them feel unsafe? Not cool.
Right.
Well, Dan would file a restraining order that required Betty to stay 100 yards from the house, his car, and the office. She would retaliate and would take an umbrella and would smash the window of his house and then go inside. And I guess he had, like, a brand new toaster and, like, demolish this brand new toaster that he just got. Like, I don't know. I think you can kind of see that the strings are kind of unraveling with her at this point.
Yeah, she's broken at this point.
Yeah. Well, in February of 1986, Dan would decide that he's like, I'm going to sell the family home, the home that they had shared. And he, of course, first went to Betty and was like, hey, let's sell it. We'll split the money. You can get a new house. And she completely refused. Was like, nope, I'm not doing it. I live here. I'm not doing that. She, of course, is still under the belief that he was having an affair with the assistant and thought that Dan was basically going through a midlife crisis. They're like, she's like, this is just a stage. Like, we're going to get through this. This is just a stage. And she that's why she went and sell the family home, because she fully thought that he was going to move back in there and they would all be a happy family again. Well, Dan did not have those thoughts, and he was able to find a loophole that allowed a judge to sign over Betty's half of the house so that Dan could sell the property, and it was all completely legal. Dan would then buy Betty a home for $650,000 to replace, so at least he didn't just kick her off on the street. I mean, he could have sold the house and was like, see ya, you know, you're not getting anything, but at least he did buy her a home and was like, you know, here you go. It was just a smaller one. And when she found out that he sold the family home, she was pissed. She was so mad that she drove over to Dan's house to confront him. And when he kind of blows her off and was like, what's done is done. Like, it's legal. I signed it. I'm already got you a new house. Like, there's no going back. We're done. We are completely done. She decided to take matters into her own hands. She got in her car and drove it straight through the front door of his house. He freaks out, of course, runs over, and he's like checking on her. Are you okay? What happened? Like, what are you doing? And she reaches over to the passenger seat and grabs a butcher knife and proceeds to try to slash and stab him with a butcher knife. He's able to subdue her. He gets the butcher knife from her. He calls the police. The police show up. And they take Betty away in a straitjacket where she would spend 3 days in a mental health institute in San Diego. Oh my gosh. So it escalated pretty quickly.
Sounds like it.
Well, in July of 1986, Dan and his attorney would go to court to finalize the divorce. Betty did not have an attorney. She claimed that no one would want to represent Dan Broderick's wife. She's like, he's too well known. He's got too many connections. Nobody will help me. And through the entire divorce proceedings, Betty would hire 5 different lawyers and then would fire each one. Once the divorce was final, Dan would receive sole custody. And according to Betty, she was not allowed visitation with the children. But according to Dan, he said that anytime she would want to see the kids, like, he would agree, but then she would show up and do stuff like this. And so it got to be like this huge deal. And he's like, I'm not doing this anymore. Like, I'm not doing it. And she just kept saying, no, that's not how it happened. He wouldn't let me see the kids. And he was like, no, I would let you if you would just act right. Like, I'm not handing my kids over to somebody that's acting like this, which I understand. You want to protect your kids. So it was a bunch of he said, she said, going back and forth. Well, Betty would start calling Dan's house and leaving awful messages on the answering machine. She would verbally attack Dan and his new girlfriend. Want to take a guess on who his new girlfriend is?
His assistant?
Yeah. Linda, the assistant.
Wow.
Yeah. So again, I can imagine that pissing you off. You suspected it the whole time. You try to get him to admit to it. He's like, that's not what it is. And then it's like, okay, buddy, but you're with her now. So I'm not stupid. I know.
Yeah. So, that's just blaming it right in front of her face like that.
Yeah. Messed up. Very messed
up. I mean, that's a really fucked up power move.
Yeah. Well, Dan was paying Betty $16,000 a month in alimony.
Holy shit.
Betty argued that this was not enough to cover her living expenses, and Dan earned 6 to 7 times that amount, so she should be paid more.
He could pay me half of that in alimony.
Okay. And again, this, you know, you feel bad for her at first, and then something like this, like, girl, you're getting $16,000 a month, and he bought you a $650,000 house, and that's still not good enough? Like, come on, girl. Like,
yeah,
get
and
it
what
together.
Year was this?
This is the 1980s?
$16,000 a month in 1980s would go a hell of a long ways.
Insane. Insane. But it wasn't good enough. She wanted more.
Oh, my God.
Well, Dan had enough, and he decided, he's like, I'm done with her charades. I'm done with her destroying my property. I'm done with the harassment. So he's like, what I'm going to do is I'm going to start charging you for your bad behavior. So he wrote her a letter that stated that he would be fining her. This is kind of funny. Like, obviously, they're both petty. He would be fining her $100 for each obscene word. $250 any time that she came onto his property, $500 any time she entered his home, and $1,000 any time that she would take their children without his permission. Which again, I mean, if she keeps doing this and nothing's working to get her to stop, I kind of see why he would do that.
It sounds to me like he's just trying to protect the kids.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Betty would claim that at one point he fined her so many times that her alimony check for that month ended up being negative $1,300.
Wow.
Betty claimed that everything wasn't just one-sided like Dan makes it out to be, though. She claimed that she received a picture of Dan and Linda with a note that said, "Eat your heart out, bitch." She supposedly kept receiving flyers about weight loss and face serums that were allegedly coming from Linda. So again, it goes back to him calling her old and fat and stupid and ugly, and then supposedly she's getting this. I don't know if that's true. They didn't have any proof of it. It could have been just her saying that. But if that girl was doing that, that's pretty messed up, and you're just feeding into this monster. Like, if you were doing that, don't do that. But like I said, there's no proof. That's just what Betty was saying. So maybe she didn't, and it was just Betty being Betty.
Betty being petty?
Betty being petty. Petty Betty. Well, Linda's friends and family, of course, they denied that Linda did any of those things. I will say that Dan and Betty's oldest daughter, Kim, said that there was one point where Betty was asking for their wedding china back because Dan had it, and Linda refused to give her the wedding china back. But again, if you're just wanting her out of there, it has no sentimental value to you, so just give the woman her china, you know? Just let her have it. So, I don't know.
Yeah, but I can also understand where if you start giving somebody something like that,
very
then they're
true.
Just going to continue to come back.
Yeah, yeah. You're
see why they wouldn't.
Feeding that monster. Oh, I got this. What else can I get? Yeah, that's very true. Well, Dan and Linda did seem to be very happy despite the constant attacks from Betty. Friends and family said that Linda brought out another side of Dan. They would eventually get engaged in 1988. Betty, on the other hand, was still going by Mrs. Broderick and refused to give up her married name, which, to be honest, if something were to happen to us, I probably wouldn't give up my married name. I'd want the same last name as my kids. So I understand that. I don't know.
Yeah, I get it too.
Well, all while continuing to call and harass Dan and Linda, one day, Betty called Dan's home and was ranting and raving. This is really where I pumped the brakes with Betty. This conversation that I'm fixing to tell you, this is really where I kind of turned and was like, I don't mess with you, Betty. So she calls the house, and she's starting to leave another one of her messages going off on him, and her 11-year-old, okay, 11 years old, son, Danny, picks up the phone. He told her, You guys are separated. You're not together anymore. He is with someone else now, and he doesn't like you anymore. You have got to stop calling and saying bad words. This has come from an 11-year-old. She then asked Danny, why doesn't Dan like me anymore? And Danny's crying, and at this point, he says, he's sick of you because you guys always get in these fights. And Betty would ask him, like, well, why do we get in these fights? And Danny says, I don't know. And that's when Betty says, because he was fucking his secretary. To her 11-year-old son, this is what she says. Danny would say, well, you guys...
I can kind of relate to that.
Nope. I am not saying that to...
I don't mean like that. Like, I've been on the other side of
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Well, it gets worse, and then we can talk more on that.
Yeah.
Betty says because he's been blanking a secretary. Danny would say, you guys were fighting before that. And Betty says, I don't think so, Danny, because what you don't know is that he was effing the secretary in the years that we were married. And Danny would then say he wanted to live with her, but she was making it harder on all of them, and they wouldn't be able to. Maybe if you stop saying bad words, everyone would be happier. At least I know I will. Coming from an 11-year-old boy, and he's just like,
that's
can you just stop? And his mom is saying, nope, because your dad's out screwing the secretary. As a mother, how can you do that to your child?
That's terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know why anybody would do something like that. Just to bring their kids into the mix is not the right place or the right thing to do.
It's not fair to the kid. This is adult problems. Even if he was screwing his secretary, that's not something you tell your 11-year-old son. They have nothing to do with this. I'm not saying you have to say, yeah, your dad's all sunshine and rainbows, but you can be like, things aren't working out. I understand that. Why would you do that? I just don't understand. And it's just her using them as pawns to get back at her husband. Like, that's all it is.
Yeah. It's sick.
It is. It is. And, I mean, like you kind of mentioned earlier, we have seen this personally. And it's just... It really messes with a kid long term. It really does, and especially when it's an ongoing issue. Oh man, guess what I did?
You hit that button again, huh?
I sure did. Okay. Well,
you're gonna have to put like one of those loading signs on there when you do that.
Well, Betty would then use this to say that Dan and Linda were manipulating her children against her. No, girl, that's what you're doing. Well,
yeah, for real. Like, that's what is that? Almost as bad as, is it gaslighting to an extent?
Well, gaslighting is like you do something and then you're like, oh, that didn't happen. That you're crazy. That's not what's going on here. No, I think this is just straight vile manipulation to her children and trying to play victim. And well, I guess it could be. I don't know.
It's I guess it's kind of a gray area of that, you know.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot that you can do to gaslight somebody that doesn't necessarily fit the criteria you explained.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess it could be gaslighting because she's like, oh, they're the ones doing it, when really it's her doing it the whole time. So I guess it could be considered gaslighting.
Yeah, and we know all too well how that works.
All too well. Well, it seemed like that. I'm not going to say Dan didn't love his children, because obviously he's taken care of them. But it does seem like there was also a lot of friction between him and his children as well. Lee would end up dropping out of high school, and Dan, but again, I can see both ways. Dan would end up writing her out of his will. Well, I could also see him doing that, but like, if you go to school, I'll put you back in. Like, I don't want you dropping. So I can kind of see maybe what he's trying to do, but it did seem like there was a lot of friction between him and his kids. And he also asked him to move out as soon as she turned 18, but he would later pay for her college tuition. So again, I don't know. It's just kind of weird that the way their relationship with their dad seemed to be kind of weird.
Yeah.
So it really seemed rocky on both sides. It doesn't seem like they had the best relationship with their dad. They obviously didn't have the best relationship with their mom, and they just have all of this hostile environment 24/7. It's just, it seemed like it really took a toll. Well, Betty decided to pursue custody of Danny and Rhett, who were 14 and 11 years old at the time. Despite everything going on, the boys did seem to gravitate more towards their mom, because I think she is more maternal with them. Their dad seems to be busy and always on the go and working, and it seems like maybe he just throws money at them, and that's his way of saying, I love you, is here's some money, love you, bye. And
I can see how that would happen, because with him not spending any time with his kids before,
mm-hmm.
all he knows is to spend money on them.
Yeah, and they kids need more than that. They need love.
They need a lot more than that.
Emotional connection, and obviously their mom's emotional, so they can get it from her. Whether it's positive or negative, they were at least getting something emotionally from their mom, where it doesn't seem like they were getting it from their dad.
Yeah.
In April of 1989, Dan and Linda would get married. There were private security guards. Linda had asked Dan to actually wear a bulletproof vest after rumors of Betty buying a revolver began to spread, but he refused. He didn't think Betty would really try to kill him, since he was basically her payday. He's like, she ain't gonna kill me, I pay her bills. And Linda had wanted to get a restraining order against Betty, but Dan really kind of refused to help her to do this. And so she actually started looking at it on her own. And again, I think it's just Dan like saying, if we ignore it, it'll go away. I just don't think he wanted to feed into it anymore. He didn't want to do it and then piss Betty off and her come back full force. I think he was just like out of sight, out of mind. Well, Danny and Rhett had been staying with Betty as kind of like a trial run. Dan and Betty were working on a new custody agreement, and that was part of it. Then, 7 months after the wedding, things would come to a head just 17 days before Dan's 45th birthday. And so that's what's crazy to me, is what's fixing to happen. It seems like they were kind of on the right track. They were working on a new custody agreement. She was having the kids over more. That's another reason where I'm like, you know, a lot of people, we'll talk about it at the end. We'll talk about it in the end. Betty would leave her two sleeping sons at home, drive to Dan's house at 1041 Cypress Avenue. She had stolen a key from her daughter, Lee, to gain access to the home. She would enter the home at 5 a.m., and at 5:30 a.m., she quietly walked up the stairs, snuck into the sleeping couple's room. She would fire 5 shots, one hitting Linda in the head and then another in the chest. This, of course, woke Dan up, so he sat up and started reaching for the phone to call 911, and Betty would shoot him in the chest. Betty would then go and unplug the phone from the wall and left the scene. Later that day, Betty would turn herself into the police. So what do you think?
This is crazy.
And like I said, it seemed like they were on the up and up. She's getting custody of the kids. They're working on it. It seemed like things were, you know, not great, but at least going better. And all of a sudden she shows up and shoots him. And to me, unplugging the phone from the wall, because we're fixing to talk about her defense, unplugging the phone from the wall, to me, shows a very calculated move. That's you removing the possibility of him calling for help.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts?
This lady's nuts.
Yeah.
I mean, 100%, she got either pushed over the edge, and I can't say that for sure, because it seems like it was bad on both sides.
Yeah, and it just kept building and building, and they were just so toxic to each other.
Yeah. And, you know, seeing things that we've kind of had some experience with other people that have shown us that side.
Yeah. Where they're just...
To an extent.
Yeah. Not to this extent, but...
Not to that extent. You get, absolutely not.
But. You get a couple and they just don't click well. They don't fight well together, which sounds crazy, but you can fight well, you know? Yeah. I'm not saying there's a right way to fight and a wrong way to fight, but there's those ones that escalate and they have to be the one that gets the final word, and they just keep going at it instead of actually listening to the other person or discussing it, or, you know, and they don't know how to communicate, and it just builds and explodes into this huge toxic relationship, and it just snowballs. Insane.
Well, I agree. I hope this lady just got. I mean, I hate to say it, but I don't want her to get a death penalty. I feel like they should show some sympathy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she never denied pulling the trigger, but she would deny that she planned to kill them.
Yeah.
She claimed that she went to the house that day because she wanted to talk to them. And then she was going to shoot herself in front of the couple, which, again, doesn't make sense to me, because you're finally getting your kids that you supposedly, that's what you've wanted this whole time. And it seems like you're working to it. And then all of a sudden you're like, I'm just going to shoot myself in front of them.
Yes, but from a mental health standpoint, I can see where that plan may have gone awry.
Yeah.
So she might have had intentions to do something like that.
Yeah.
But then when she got there,
rage.
That flip switched.
Yeah. That flip switched?
That switch flipped.
Wow, the flip has switched. You. The flip has switched. Well, she would go on to say that she entered the home. Linda moved in her sleep and scared Betty, causing her to pull the trigger. 5 times? Pull the trigger 5 times?
Well, have you ever shot at anybody?
No.
Neither have I, so it's hard to...
And that's if you count that time I shot Garrett in the eye with Windex.
No. I mean, if you're in a mental state like that, and you pull that trigger... You're still not aware of what's going on, I think.
Maybe.
So I can see how somebody would just continue to do that until the gun stops.
Maybe. So but it seems like it was very calculated, though. In the head, in the chest, and then him in the chest.
Yes.
That's not... I could see, like, what you're saying, just emptying the gun or whatever. But to me, if you were doing that, it would be... everywhere, you know, you're just freaking out and shooting. But to shoot him in the head and both in the chest, that seems pretty calculated.
Yes. But like I said, there's variables to this that just don't make any sense. And then you start looking into the mental health stuff on this side, and there's no sense to be made of any of it.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, is you can't make sense of it, because it doesn't make sense.
Exactly.
Well, during her trial, her attorney, Jack Early, used the battered woman who has been pushed to the brink after years of verbal and emotional abuse defense. The prosecutor, Carrie Wells, portrayed Betty as a murderer who planned the killings out. She had been receiving $16,000 a month, was living in a $650,000 home. She had a new boyfriend at that time. The prosecutor would go on to push that Betty wasn't a poor, battered woman. This trial would end in a hung jury because 2 jurors held out for a conviction of manslaughter because they didn't feel that she planned the murder. The other jurors.
That's kind of how I feel about it. I don't know how you convict in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's hard to look at someone that's been so abused and used for so long.
100%.
And then expect them not to snap.
And that's really why this case blew up like it did, because that's been the argument the whole time. Was she, you know, you really sympathize with this woman with everything that she went through?
Unfortunately, yes.
To this point.
And the ultimate person that suffers are those kids.
Are the kids. And I don't feel like she took, and that's, I think, again, you're not supposed to rule on emotion, but me as a mother, I think that's where the line is crossed for me. She didn't think about those kids. She used them as pawns. She never once thought about those kids. And to me, as a mother, that's where I'm like, that's where I don't sympathize anymore. And it's harder for me.
Do you think that with her mental state, she grew to start resenting those kids?
Possibly, because she was the main provider, the main caregiver for so long. I mean, that's a good point. And especially if she's not doing
well. I can see that, I guess, but I couldn't feel that way.
No. But if there was already some mental health issues there before, and then all of this happens and escalates to what it is, I mean, it would make sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good point.
This is a sad story.
I know. Sorry.
That's okay. I mean,
but
these
again,
things need to be talked about.
I was going to say, I feel like that's why I chose this, because I do feel like it needs to be talked about. Because again, you just see that progression leading up to the event and something like this to where you do see it. And it's like, you feel bad for her. You really do sympathize. It doesn't mean she should take a life, but...
Absolutely not. But then you, on the other hand, our mental health side of healthcare is lacking severely.
Even today, yes. It is. And this was back in the, you know, late 80s.
The 80s, yeah. And that would have been not long after the mental institutions would have been gone anyway. Because I can't remember who did it, but there was a president that got rid of the state-run institutions, and then everything became privatized.
Yeah.
So those people couldn't really, I guess, afford mental health, or it wasn't necessarily available.
And it wasn't really looked at, you know, especially back then.
Yeah, and back then, if you went to a shrink, you were looked at as weird.
Yeah, or even women. I mean, even around that time, women are like, you're being dramatic. Like, calm down. And it's like, no, they were going through some shit. So...
Yeah, like, I could see how the pressure of society would add to the pressure of her relationship.
There it is. Was it a fly? There's a fly in here now. It didn't feel like a fly because it felt like a patter, but maybe it was a fly.
I don't know.
We're going to say it was a fly earlier, okay? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. What were you saying?
I don't remember.
I don't either. Cut me off. Sorry. I was just excited there was something in here, so maybe I didn't get tapped on the shoulder. But yeah, I mean, there's just so much to it with, like you said, the mental health. And the way it was back then, the way it is now, it really needs to be talked about, and it needs to be better. It really needs to be better. Well, the other jurors agreed it was second degree murder. Is that where I'm at? Yeah, this trial would end in a hung jury because two jurors held out for a conviction of manslaughter because they didn't feel that it was planned. The other jurors agreed it was second-degree murder. After the mistrial, she would be retried a year later in 1991 with the same prosecutor and defense lawyer.
Now, wait a second. Can you be tried twice for the same crime?
Yes, because she wasn't convicted. She was not convicted. She was not charged. It was a mistrial. It was a hung jury. So they have to go back to the courts and do it again because the jurors couldn't agree. So they have to go back again to get a conviction.
Okay, that makes sense.
This time, she would be convicted of two counts of second-degree murder and sentenced to 32 years to life in prison. She received 15 years for the two murders and then an additional 2 years for the illegal use of a firearm during the crime. Her sentences were ordered to run consecutively. So.
Yeah, I think that's a fair decision.
Yeah.
Because she did ultimately take someone's life.
Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of seems calculated to an extent.
Yeah.
But at the same time, with all the trauma, with all the things that were going on, it seems like Linda was pushing her buttons.
But again, that was never proven. I mean, that was just what Betty was saying. So.
I get it. But at the same time, this is a broken woman.
Yeah. 100%. 100%.
So she, I feel like she got a fair deal at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, regardless, you don't take somebody's life, whether it. You,
absolutely not.
Yeah. Well, Betty would remain in the public eye after her sentencing, doing interviews with media networks. A made-for-TV movie was aired in early 1992, and then a sequel was broadcast that fall. At about the same time, Oprah Winfrey visited Betty at the Central California Women's Facility.
I kind of remember that.
I watched the interviews. I went back and watched the interviews. Definitely go watch it.
What year was that?
1992.
I would have been like, what, 7?
Yeah.
I seem to remember Oprah interviewing somebody at a jail.
Oh, she did it all the time, girl.
Yeah, maybe that's why I remember it.
Maybe. Or it could have been like a rerun or something that you've seen.
Yeah, possibly.
Well, numerous writers began interviewing Betty, resulting in 3 books about the case. Towards the end of 1995, the DOV began refusing to give reporters access to inmates. At this time, inmates, like Charles Manson, were using media to exploit their notoriety. One reporter with the Reader had been in contact with Betty through letters. One letter explained the band made it harder to interview inmates. And I've got a little snippet of what Betty sent back to them in response. She said, quote, "It's nice to see that you are still at the Reader. Isn't it amazing what Pete Wilson can get away with?" And that's in reference to the band. "Happy birthday to me. I'm turning 50 this week. When I remember that I was slitting my wrist on the 36th because of the affair that Dan's purposeful cruelty towards me, it's amazing that I'm still alive." So even then, I'm just kind of like, it's just her kind of being... I don't know. And, you know, I thought I would feel for her more after watching the interviews and be like, you know, I think I could connect to her more. I don't like her.
Maybe I need to watch those interviews because, like, I've got some sympathy towards her right now.
I do. I do still have sympathy for her, but she's just very condescending is not the right word, but just kind of like, poor me. I can't believe I did. This wasn't on me. Like, she has no remorse. To me, if it was an accident, oops, my bad. I think she would at least be like, I cannot believe I did this. Like, I messed up my children's lives. I've messed up, you know, all these other lives. I was in a bad, dark place. I screwed up. She never did that. She never did.
That's how a normal person would say things.
Yeah.
But somebody with mental health issues, maybe she has borderline personality disorder.
Maybe.
I mean, there's a lot of things that could cause that.
I can't remember if I talked to, like I said, it's been a while since I've researched this. I don't remember if they ever gave her a diagnosis or anything.
Yeah.
Well, during the Oprah interview, Betty described a perfect marriage, having a lot in common, and said that she took her marriage vows very seriously. She said that Dan was never a womanizer, and she totally trusted Dan until 1983. They were at a party, and Dan began talking about a girl that he thought was really beautiful. She said that was the first clue that Linda existed. He then hired and began dating her in September of 83, according to Betty. She would then go on to say that he was not happy with her, the house, or the kids, Oprah asked why she brought the gun if she only planned to talk to them, and Betty would say she only did it to make Dan and Linda listen to her. So she kind of switched her story a little bit. At first, it was like, I was going to end my life while I was there. But then she's like, oh, they wouldn't listen to me. That was the only way to get them to listen if I had a gun. Betty would also claim that she had tried to talk to them multiple times, but any time that Dan seen her coming, he would just call the police and have her arrested immediately. Yeah, because you're busting his windows and driving your car through his front door and
a full fucking bag of nuts.
Pulling a knife on him. Like, yeah, I would too, girl.
Yeah.
She said that she opened the door and Linda woke up and told Dan to call the police. Dan sat up, reached for the phone, Betty screamed no, and the gun just went off. And that is as fast as it happened. Oprah asked if she was sorry for what she did, and Betty would go on to say, she is sorry for this whole thing, but mostly sorry that Dan Broderick chose to conduct marriage and our family in his life the way he did. There is no reason for it, and it was brutality, and they didn't deserve that. That's all she said.
That doesn't sound genuine at all.
No.
When you make an apology and then say but.
Yeah, and blame it on him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't his decision to pull that trigger.
No. Well, 8 months later, Oprah visited again, this time at the facility, and Oprah says, you know, I have a lot of bad things happen in my life, and I know that my choices led to what happened. Betty would go on to say that she takes full responsibility for what happened, and she never lied about what happened. And then the very next sentence says, I never made a conscious decision to ever hurt anybody, much less kill anybody.
But she did.
But she did. Then she goes on to explain that she didn't have any control of her actions. She didn't even step both feet in the room, just one. She doesn't even remember pulling the trigger once, much less multiple times. And Oprah was like, yeah, it was five times, babe. Like, you pulled the trigger five times.
Yeah, but again, like we said, that flash, the bang, and the instant stress of that situation could either cause you to remember extreme details or your mind will block it out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Betty keeps saying that she was just going to confront them. It was all because he wouldn't talk to her without attorneys or calling the police. It made good sense to me. And Oprah was like, wait, what did? And Betty said, taking the gun. Make them listen to me. And Oprah was later she said that she realized after interviewing Betty that Betty had made the entire life, you know, this perfect mom, the perfect wife, and like this perfect persona, and she was not willing or able to let it go. And that's what she believed eventually led up to this.
Yeah.
Oprah would eventually interview Betty's children. Kim had even testified against her mother during the trial. Kim would reflect on the day that Betty dropped her off at her father's house. Oprah said that Betty had told her that Dan stole the kids from her, and Kim was like, no, she took us there. But when Betty was talking to Oprah, she's like, yeah, he stole the kids from me. And Kim was like, no, she did this. And Kim would go on to say that Dan never tried to keep them away from her. That wasn't even on his radar until everything started transpiring. And Kim even confirmed that they did get visitation with their father and Betty. And Betty actually didn't lose full custody due to her father's influence, but due to her mother doing all the crazy things that she did. Like, her father had nothing to do with that. It was because of her actions that that Dan got custody of the kids. So again, it wasn't him, it was her. Dan would say that as a child, this is little Dan, sorry, the kid. He would say that as a child, he didn't feel caught in the middle, but now that he is older, and I really feel for Dan because during the interview, you can still tell that he really loves his mom. And I think he's really conflicted with what she did and having that love for her and losing his father. My heart really hurt for Dan. But he would say that as a child, he didn't feel caught in the middle. But now that he's older and looks back, he does see that he was. He would say that he felt that his mom would intentionally use the kids to hurt Dan. Not so much Dan using the kids. So he's like, yeah, my mom really used us to get back at him, but my dad really didn't at all.
I really want you to send me these interviews.
I will.
I'll watch them tonight. I'm curious.
I'll try to find them.
Okay.
He would go on to say that as a kid, he really wanted to be with his mom, but Betty convinced the boys that Dan was stopping that from happening. So she even told the boys, your dad won't let me see you. It's not because of me and what I'm doing. Your dad won't allow it. Oprah asked if he thought that his mom was unstable, and he said no, but at times she would act out of control. He said back then that he thought if they were able to move back in with his mom, that she would be happier and that would fix all the issues. And Oprah would go on to say that Betty had admitted to not being remorseful for what she had done and how that affects them. Kim said what hurts more is that their mother has no remorse for leaving them parentless or in the situation that they are in now. And I agree.
Oh my God.
Dan said that he thinks that Betty does feel bad for what she did, but won't admit it because then it will be like their father won. And again, that's just her trying to get back at the dad. It has nothing to do about her kids. It's her. It's her having to get that final say. Well, in January of 2010, her first request for parole would be denied because she did not show remorse and did not acknowledge any wrongdoing. In 2017, San Diego County Deputy D.A. Richard Sachs, I believe is Sachs maybe, said Betty was completely unrepentant and described her as defiant. So from what I understand, even in jail, she was a menace, a straight up menace. Like, I can't remember what podcast I was listening to, but and I'm going to have to go find it. But like, even when she was in jail, if she would get pissed off, there's at one point she got mad about something. This is so gross, but she would poop and then wipe it all over the walls and be like, you clean it up. Like, just to get back at the jailers.
Dude, my heart is broken now.
Why?
Those kids.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the interviews are awful.
I'm literally crying.
Yeah, the interviews are awful. And again, you really see how it affects. I think Kim really understands how messed up her mom was. I think Danny does, but he still has that connection with his mom that he doesn't want to admit it, if that makes sense.
You said he was the youngest, right?
He was younger than Kim. I don't know if he was the young. Yeah, no, he might have been the youngest. Yeah, I think he was the baby.
Yeah, so he probably didn't see the same thing as they did or even maybe remember most of
it. Yeah, yeah. Kind of rose-colored glasses.
Yeah.
Well, on May 8th, 2026, at 3:40 a.m., Betty Broderick would die in prison at 78 years old. According to her son, Danny, Betty was on life support at the time of her death, and Betty had been transferred to an outside medical facility for a higher level of care on April 18th before passing away. And that is the story of Betty Broderick. Oops. Yeah, she didn't take those kids into consideration and, you know, kind of like us coming from broken homes and seeing some of this stuff in real life and relating to it. It does nothing but harm the kid, even if she didn't kill their dad. I mean, it just that mental torture is what it is on those kids. It just I don't think that gets talked enough about either, and how that affects children. So.
And that's another argument for mental health.
Yeah. I didn't mean to.
I mean, kids get put in that situation more often than they should.
100%. And then it's just, again, it they carry it for the rest of their lives.
I hope those kids get help.
Yeah. I did a little bit of searching, kind of see where they were at now, and they're really kind of out of the public eye, which I don't blame them.
Yeah, I don't blame them either.
It seemed like Danny was still really close with his mom and still visited her on like a regular basis. So I think he was still really close with her. It seemed like the other kids kind of were, I think they couldn't, I don't want to speak for, on their behalf, but it they didn't seem to be as close as the baby did. So,
I mean, I can understand that they would probably feel abandoned.
Yeah.
And tortured in ways that just most people can't understand.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, of course, they would hold resentment to the person that created most of that problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a horrible story.
Yeah. I didn't mean to make you cry. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, that's why I chose this one, is I think all of the points that we've already covered, I mean, I just don't think they're talked about enough in divorces and mental health and children and just the impact that these killings have, not just on the victims, but there's so many more victims than the actual physical victim. And it's all the families. It's the kids. It's the parents, it's the sisters and the brothers. I mean, it's not just one person that it affects. It's a whole broad stroke of people.
And this creates generational trauma.
Yeah, it really does.
These kids are going to have problems that most likely get passed down.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah, or they're really going to have to do some serious, serious therapy work to
And that's what I'm saying.
Manage.
Like, mental health has got to be higher on the scale now.
Yeah.
I just don't understand why we don't have better facilities for this.
I don't know. Or even affordable. I mean.
Yeah, that too.
It's just, it's heartbreaking. It definitely is. And I feel like if they would put more effort, I mean, a lot of these stories could be avoided. I mean, it's crazy.
It's a tragedy.
100%. Definitely is. Well, another week of making you sad.
You're gonna have to tell me a ghost story next week.
Did you not? Were you not present for the ghost story that just tapped me on my shoulder 2 minutes ago? I'm hoping.
I mean,
it's...
that might have been the only comedic relief in this whole story.
Oh yeah, I'm just hoping this fly that's buzzing around. It really didn't feel like a fly though, because normally you can kind of feel a fly. Like this felt like somebody went on my shoulder.
I mean, before any of that, I'd never seen the fly flying around, but now I see it.
Yeah, now it's flying around. It's driving me insane. But it literally, and I looked, and there wasn't any fly anywhere, but it literally felt like something went, there was like two taps on my shoulder.
You'll have to watch the video footage back.
No.
No, you don't want to know?
I don't know what the hell that was. Well, you want a spooky one next week? Actually, I think I am doing a spooky. I think I am going to do Caddo Lake next week.
Okay.
So.
And you have some cool pictures for it.
I do. Josh is turning into a little photographer on his trips. You need to get a real camera. Take some good pictures.
I do need a better camera.
Yeah. Well, that's it for this week. So next week we will bring spooky. I think you'll be in person next week because, yeah, you come home Friday.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we may record Friday night or Saturday because we don't have softball.
We don't have anything to do.
Look at us go. Okay.
What are we going to do with ourselves?
Mow the grass because it's bad. I was going to do it today for Josh, so he didn't have to do it when he got home. But as soon as I
imagine it's probably 4 foot tall now.
Oh, it's bad. And as soon as I got done cleaning up the backyard, there was a tarp that we were covering our firewood with this winter. And I was like, oh, I'll pull that out and let it dry so I can fold it up and put it away. Got it all stretched out, finished cleaning up the backyard, was fixing to start on the front, and the bottom fell out and it started pouring down rain. So the tarp I stretched out to dry is now soaking wet.
Soaked.
It's awesome. Well, I'm sorry I brought the mood down, but I really thought it was one that needed to be discussed. It had some important points, and I'm glad I could share that with you.
Thank you for breaking my heart.
That's what I'm here for. Well, next week we'll bring the spooky. Our numbers have grown so much this week. I guess welcome to new listeners. I don't know where you found us. Our TikTok's growing, and it's exciting seeing everything go up. So I really appreciate it. And I guess that's it for this week. So tune in next week where the guilty confess.
And the ghostly never rest.
Bye, y'all.
Bye, guys.